Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Every team, every topic, everywhere, this is Believe.
Of the Night Report podcast. I'm your host, Mike Broadbent. Joining me once again is my co-host, Richie O'Leary. Got a pretty packed pod for you guys today. Scrimmage number two is in the books for Rutgers football. We'll go over what was said after that and anything that Richie's allowed to talk about. Dylan Harper had himself a day last night. He won the Jordan Brand Classic game MVP in the final game, I believe, of his high school career. We also have some intel on a big man target for Rutgers in the transfer portal for hoops. We'll get into all that and more. But first, our presenting sponsor is Night and Day Apparel, calling all Rutgers students, alumni, and fans. Are you looking for new and unique Rutgers merchandise? Night and Day Apparel has you covered, from t-shirts to hoodies, drinkware to pet accessories. They have everything you need as a fan. Be sure to check them out at this year's Rutgers Day. They're going to be on College Farm Road from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. That's this Saturday, April 27th, before the spring game. They'll be there with special promotions and discounts. Be sure to check out all the links also today in today's podcast description to stay on top of everything Night and Day, including new merch drops and promotional announcements. Shop now and keep chopping.
Real quick, before we go any further, shoot. I just noticed this on their website. At the Rutgers Day event from 12 to 1, you can purchase it right now, $15 tickets online, or you can buy it in person. You get to meet and you get an autograph and a picture with Antonia Bates, I think I pronounced that correctly, the women's basketball player, and Jeremiah Williams. So $15, and you get both autographs, pictures with both. I mean, hey, hear me out. College Farm Road at the Night and Day booth, and it's also presented by Knight Society, so they get a little chunk of it too. So you help everyone out. You get some NIL, you get some photographs, some autographs. There you go.
Some great gear. Can't think of a better mashup than that. So definitely check them out. So like I said at the top, scrimmage number two is in the books. That was this past Saturday. Rutgers, from what Greg Schiano was saying, looks, you know, I think he said specifically, it looks like they're actually playing football now. Last year, he felt like they were just running plays, and now they're actually like playing the game of football. It sounds like the team is well ahead of, at any point they were, in Schiano's 2.0 era this spring. Mm-hmm. So the positive vibes continue to build. What are you hearing about how the scrimmage went and how this team is kind of situated leading up to the spring game this Saturday?
Yeah, I mean, everyone's questions are going to be about the quarterback. I know people are already on social media on the message board saying like, oh, we're really going to get the feel out the quarterback position on Saturday. Probably not. It's going to rain, it sounds like. Knock on wood. Hopefully it doesn't.
It's been back and forth. Right now it looks like it's not going to rain. So
all right, well, even better. But still, they're not going to reveal their hands. They're not going to do anything crazy. And mind you, Saturday is not going to be a deciding factor in the quarterback thing at all. This is about showing off the team, getting some momentum built for the season. So you'll see some big play attempts and stuff like that. But you're going to see a Johnny Shepherd 50-yard bomb. You're not going to see – you might see an Ethan or like a Gavin 50-yard chuck, but – regardless, Greg sounded pretty enthusiastic about the quarterback position. There was some good, there was some bad, but he also sounded like it's starting to take shape, I think was the wording he used. Definitely made some mistakes. He did actually go out of his way to say that there was two interceptions. There was some really good completions. He said there's a lot to learn still, but starting to take shape is a good sign. I know Craig asked a question about how he feels about this year versus last year's spring practices. And he said, like you mentioned before, they actually look like a football team for a change. I shouldn't say for a change, but it looks like a lot better. And I've been pretty adamant about this. This is one of the better scrimmages I've seen in like or better couple of scrimmages we've seen since Shiano's returned. I think this team actually looks really good. Now, I might be jumping the gun a little bit by saying 10 wins, but that's not my official prediction, just to throw it out there. But I do think they're going to have a really good season. I think 8 wins is very possible. I think more is very possible, too. It's a lot to go still. And it's also tough, too, because as Greg mentioned, a lot of these guys on the defense aren't playing right now. Of course, longer beam's out, but some of the veterans are just taking it easy. They're not going to throw them out there because when you lose cornerback one and running back one for the spring, it's kind of like, okay, hold up. That's wait a sec. So, they're taking it easy. But overall, team looks good. Offense looks good. Some young guys are starting to shine. Benjamin Black, KJ Duff. So exciting year on offense for Rutgers, it seems like.
Yeah, I think this collection of pass catchers, like you alluded to, is probably the best that – Shiano's had. I mean, like, obviously it's the best he's had in the 2.0 era, but it might be the best that Rutgers has had in over a decade. When you think of the top guys, there's three seniors that are going to be leading the way in long time. Rutgers pass catcher, Christian Dremel, the new guys in Nassim Brantley and Daimir Miller. And then you got these young guys. It sounds like Benjamin Black and KJ Duff, he calls him, it's KJ, right? He likes to be called by KJ.
Yeah, he wants to go by KJ. It's technically okay. Corey Duff Jr., but KJ, Corey Duff.
And, yeah. Got it. So KJ Duff and Benjamin Black sound like they are making a big impression on this team early on. And that's something that that Shiano has mentioned, so it's a lot to be discussed. But what do you see as like the ceiling for these pass catchers this year?
It's going to be interesting because last year you used a lot of Christian Dremel. I still think you'll see a lot of him. I think he'll be even more open because now the outside threats are there. Daimir Miller is coming in as the FCS leading receiver. He's not going to replicate those numbers, but I still think he could have like a 700-800 yard, if not more, season. Like, I think the quarterbacks are going to help a lot. There's good competition, whether it be Gavin or Ethan. We've seen Gavin look better than we've seen him last year. I think I can say that. I think that's a fact. Ethan is a very good quarterback in his own right, too. So we'll see what happens there. Competition brings out the best in everyone. But I think between Miller, between Brantley, between the two freshmen that are – Corey Duff's huge. Benjamin Black's the complete opposite. He's a speedster. I think these – and they can play anywhere. It's not like you just have to slot them like – well, I mean, obviously Corey Duff's huge. You can't really slot him on the inside, but I think Benjamin Black can go just about anywhere. He's just a freaky weapon, and he's going to play some snaps this year. And you just return a lot of guys too. So there's depth. There's some pieces that are not so good. There's some pieces that I think could be really good. I think this wide receiver room, like you said, probably the best they've had since Shiano's returned. Duff, definitely. Maybe the flood era. Because I don't think Ash had any really good. I know he had Melton, don't get me wrong, but he really didn't have a good wide receiver group. It was just Melton at the one point.
Yeah.
I don't think there is anyone. I think
so.
About
to it, me, but. It kind of it goes back to, I don't know if this was an overlap or not, but I'm pretty sure that there was at least one year where Brandon Coleman and Leonte Carew overlapped. I think that was the 2013 season.
Yeah.
So it's probably the best since then. Yeah.
Right?
Yep.
Yeah, that big game.
So that was the year they had. So they overlapped for 2 years, 2012 and 13. So that's probably the best since then. And I mean, if you run down the pass catchers on that 2013 team, you had Brandon Coleman, Leonte Carew, Tyler Croft, Ruhan Peel, Carlton Agudosi, Andre Patton, like Janarion Grant, like most of these guys, Michael Burton. There was a lot of NFL talent on that team. You know, Michael Burton's still in the NFL. Brandon Coleman played like 4 or 5 years. Tyler Croft's still in the NFL. Caron Pratt, too, I forgot about.
He had a sniff in the league.
Andre Patton had a year or two in the league. Janarion Grant, he had a year in the league, and then he's been in the CFL ever since.
Yeah.
So a lot of high-end talent in that. And obviously, Leonte Carew got drafted. He played, 4 or 5 years in the league. So definitely probably the best since like 13.
Yeah, for sure. I think this wide receiver room is going to be a pretty solid one. So we'll wait and see.
Was there anything else Shiano said after the game that you want to hit on before we move on to some hoops talk?
Not really. It's just more so just getting ready for spring game next week. Yep. Hopefully, like I said, I hope it doesn't rain. Knock on wood. Yep, but It could be a nice day. It's starting to look like it's going to be in the mid-60s, I think, last I checked. So hopefully everyone goes out, shows out, show up early and often. I think the Knights of the Raritan have a tailgate. I think everyone – there's going to be a million tailgates, so it doesn't really matter. But, yeah, go check out what they're doing. The boardwalk will be open, so that's always a cool thing. No nice. Roller coaster yet, but it is coming, supposedly. They're going to try to make it work sometime. Check out the new tents too, the new Revel tents. If I don't know how that's going to work, is it rented out to someone? Can you just go check it out and be like, oh wow, this is cool seating. I should get this for the season.
That's right. Yep.
Yeah. The temporary tents who, I think NJ.com posted yesterday, but we had first, I'm just saying, with Pat Hobbs interview. I want to see what those look like. I'm very intrigued. There's also a new scoreboard on the north end zone. I think that's the north end zone. Or new like little jumbotron, new wording, SHI Stadium everywhere. but other than that, I think it's going to be a pretty good day, though. Wait and see what the offense can do.
Yep, going to be a great day. It's going to be fun to actually see these guys put on some pads, play an actual somewhat kind of close to a football game.
Sort of.
But it'll just be fun to kind of get back on campus and tailgate a bit. I think KTR is having a bit of a tailgate as well, or is that still happening?
KTR might, not TKR.
Not TKR. I'm sorry, TKR.
I'm going to bounce around to a bunch of people. I tried to make it work, but it's a lot of work to set up a whole tailgating party and all that and get people together. No. Maybe not. Maybe next year. Maybe during the season. Maybe. Just saying. Working on
some maybes. We'll see how things go. Let's transition to some hoops talk. So last night was the Jordan Brand Classic, where Dylan Harper won the game MVP. Ace Bailey was also invited to the game, but he couldn't make it because McEachern's prom was this weekend. So that is why he wasn't there. And given that he's played in basically everything else, it's not him ducking it. It's just he chose going to prom over playing in another All-Star game, which I don't blame him. You only get one prom. But Dylan Harper, man, he looked like by far the best player on the court last night. You know, especially late in the game, it was just Dylan, taking the team on his back. There was a series where he had three straight possessions for the, I forget the name of his squad. It was either Flight or whatever. His squad, he hit three straight dagger threes where he just took the ball up the court, spotted up, hit a three. He hit the game winner. You know, they do these funny scoring mechanisms in these games where it's like the first to get to a certain number. So he hit the game winning shot. After he hit that shot, he was doing the I'm number one. And given the kind of resume he's put together this year, it's hard to argue against him being the number one player in the country. And let me make the case. So this past summer, the USA was in the U19 World Cup. He led the team in scoring. And this was playing alongside guys who were sophomores in college. He won the state title. For Bosco this year, he led the team to a state title. He was the best player on that team, and they were the number one ranked team in the state. He won Gatorade NJ Player of the Year, consensus top three player across basically every recruiting service you could find. He won the Max Preps National Player of the Year. He was the McDonald's All-American MVP. He was the Jordan Brand Classic MVP. What else does this guy need to do? He scored the third most points ever in Jordan Brand Classic history, only behind LeBron James's 2003 performance and, one of the strangest bits of trivia ever. Emmett Williams in 2018 scored 44 points in the Jordan Brand Classic. Don't know who that guy is. We looked him up and he didn't even get drafted. He never played an NBA game. He was a former five-star who went to LSU. But that resume, man, that is tough to go. That's like up there against basically any resume I can think of in recent memory. And then you have all these national guys who are like, Dylan Harper's going to be a problem. Like, wow, I didn't realize he was this good. Like, guy was the number one player in the country for a long stretch this past year. Yeah. And, he hasn't dropped. He's been, between 1 and 3. That's about as far as he's oscillated in terms of rankings. So all these people who are like shocked by how good he is, like, have you had your head in the fucking sand? Like, this guy is a stud. And I think he is probably going to be the best freshman guard in the country next year, just because you could just tell he plays with so much control. He's not rattled by moments. It seems like he elevates his game in these late game situations. So I am just really excited to see him play. There was a lot of very jealous fans that I saw last night on Twitter and on Trilly's Discord talking about Rutgers getting Dylan Harper. What did you notice about his game during the Jordan Brand Classic that really impressed you?
He's just such a smart player. But I would say, other than that, the fact that he was hitting threes, like that was supposed to be his biggest knock, is that he's a good three-point shooter. He's average at best. He struggled at times from deep. And then all of a sudden, like, this man just started nailing three after three after three. And I'm like, whoa, wait, what the fuck? This guy's like, he's hitting. If he can hit those, then it's just like, that's where you have the argument for that consensus, like, number one player. Now, it is based a little bit on future potential, too. And he doesn't have the athleticism, but he is athletic. Don't get me wrong. I don't think he has the athleticism that like an Ace Bailey has or like a Cooper Flagg has. But and that's probably the biggest thing holding him back from taking that number one spot. But he has dominated all these big events against the top level competition. And they say it, like, when the lights turn on, the stars start to shine. And there you go. There's your star. We all keep talking about Ace Bailey and how he's going to dominate the Big Ten next year. In reality, Dylan might be averaging more points than him. Will Ace have more 30-point games? Or maybe I'm exaggerating on that a little bit too, but will Ace have more like big-time games? Probably, if I had to guess. I think Ace is going to take more shots. I think there's games where Ace will get 10. There's games where Ace will get 25. I think Dylan's a consistent 16 to 17, and he's going to get that for you no matter what, whether it be three-point shooting, whether it be driving to the bucket, free-throw shooting too, which is phenomenal. Yeah. So he just does a little bit of everything, and he's so smart with the ball. I know people are trying to put their depth charts together for Rutgers, and they're like, all right, Jeremiah at the one, Dylan at the two. I'm like, nope, flip, Dylan at the one. I want Dylan having the ball in his hands 24-7 if I can. He's just such a smart player with the ball. He might be 6'6", but he moves so much better than that, and he's just so smart in transition or this and that. He just knows where to place the ball, where to put it so these other guys can succeed. And he doesn't mind doing that either. He's so unselfish. But if he needs to get buckets, he'll go get 30 and 8 real quick. And that's the other rebound, the rebounding too. He rebounds exceptionally well for a guard.
Yep.
So everyone that's concerned about potentially putting Ace at the four, where's the rebounding going to come from? Dylan Harper is going to grab a bunch. Ace is going to grab some. Whoever your three man is, Dirk Kack's been a pretty good rebounder. Or you flip-flop, you put Martini at the four, whatever. Martini's a decent rebounder. Like, you got so many options on this team next year, and they're not even done building. Like, this team is going to be freaked.
That's the really scary part of this. Like, there is a lot of optimism from inside the facility right now for Rutgers hoops about how talented this next year's squad's going to be. Mm-hmm. And I don't think we're ready for it, because not only I feel like we've kind of gotten so caught up with who we're getting in the portal that we're overlooking how good Dylan and Ace are going to be. Like, these are guys that, I've said it elsewhere, but I'll say it here. They would start on any team in the country next year. We have two guys who put them on Kansas, put them on Kentucky, put them on UConn. Dylan Harper starting for UConn. Ace Bailey starting for UConn. Doesn't matter. They're the two-time national champs. He's starting. They're both starting there. They're both starting at whatever program in the country you throw them on. They're that level of talent. So we have not kind of gotten around how good these two guys are, because we're too caught up in, like, who are we adding around here? Who are we adding around there? Anybody we're adding in the portal right now are supplemental players to make Ace and Dylan be able to shine the brightest that they possibly can. Like, we need a big man, and we'll get into a guy that Rutgers is showing a lot of interest in, that basically can be like a rim runner and a rim protector. They don't need a guy who can step out and shoot. You know, Danny Wolf would be a great pickup, but they don't need an offensive talent like that. They just need a guy who can anchor a defense the same way Cliff did. And they need a guy who can hit an open shot if, you know, you have a drive. You have, like, because Jeremiah is a great slasher. Dylan's an, you know, elite level, you know, facilitator. Just the guy who can, like, catch and shoot. Hit it from the corner, like, reliably when you get an open shot, because you're going to get open looks. Everybody's going to get open looks next year. Yep. It's going to be a fun, fun team. And you talk about how good of a shooter Dylan is. Ace, while he is streaky, if you look at his numbers from this past year, he's an excellent shooter. I forget where I saw this, but somebody posted his stat line from this past year at McEachern. He shot 89% from the line on the year. and 43% from three. Now he goes into these All-Star games and he just tries to, you know, take some circus shots on occasion, but he hits a lot of them. You don't want to take that out of his game because that's a big part of what makes him special. Mm-hmm. But he's going to have those streaky games. Like you said, he's going to score 35 probably some point next year, but he's also going to have some games where he scores seven and he shoots, you know, 2 of 10 from the field. Like that's just who he is. And he's still, if you watch him play, he's got these long levers, he's got long legs, long arms, but he's not, you know, he doesn't have a ton of muscle on his frame yet. He'll develop that, especially when you compare it to like Dylan. I don't know if you've noticed this too, but throughout this season, Dylan has like shed a lot of baby fat. Like he looks like borderline, like I wouldn't say shredded, but he looks a lot more, I don't know, for lack of a better term, like manly than he did at the start of the high school season. Like he's really developing into his body. So that's going to be he's going to be a problem next year. Yeah. But when we're talking about guys to add around Ace and Dylan, obviously you had a guy in Jaden Jones this past week who was on campus. From everything we've heard, he had a great time. But he's scheduled a couple more visits. What are you hearing about Jaden Jones in terms of how things went with Rutgers and where else he might be visiting before he makes a decision?
Yeah, so Rutgers is pretty confident. They did really well on the visit. Sounds like he really liked things. We learned a little more, and you can give a shout out to Fonseca on this one for his article talking with Jones afterwards. But he basically said Mike Larkin just kind of reached out and it just kind of developed from there. So Larkin is like their go-to kind of unofficial recruiting director of recruiting. I think he's actually got the title assistant coach, but it's one of those that can't travel, has to stay on campus because you can only have three travel. But yeah, regardless, sounds like his visit went really well. he knows what his role would be. They kind of described it to him. It sounds like more of like a six man type role where he could even start at times based on lineups and schemes and whoever they're facing. Like you're going against a three guard lineup, I think he could be your third guard. It brings a shooting factor that no one on this team really has. Now, mind you, you did just say Ace shot, 40-something from three this year?
43% from three.
Yeah, he could technically hit the same amount. But I think Jaden Jones is more of a spot up, like I'm just going to pull, and that's your lethal weapon from deep. Combine that with Dylan Harper, who could drive, Ace, who could drive, Jeremiah Williams, who could drive, and a big man, I think it's perfect, kind of. Yeah. They need a shooter. They really want a shooter, and it makes a lot of sense to add a guy like that. But he is going to visit. He's talking with Butler. We reported that on the message board the other day. He's talking about getting a visit there. He hasn't scheduled anything yet, so that's the big part before I say the other school too. He hasn't scheduled a single visit yet, but between Butler and Oklahoma, he's looking at those two pretty heavily. I know Oklahoma is trying to sell him in a similar role, be that a six-man scoring guard for them. I don't know what Butler's depth chart looks like. It could be the same thing for all I know, but three very different locations, mind you, also for a kid that's been in California his entire life. And coast to coast, I mean, is Jersey California? No, but I can see the similarities. I can't see a similarity between California and Oklahoma personally. Sure. But yeah, so I still think Rutgers has a good shot, but if he's going to take other visits, that's where things start to basically tell me it could go elsewhere. It means he's not confident enough to commit, because if you're confident enough to commit, like you just do it, like that's it, simple, done.
Yeah. Yep.
So we'll wait and see what happens.
He's got to do his due diligence. He's got 1 year of eligibility left, obviously, and who knows what. A lot of these guys, it's like, what are you trying to get out of your final year? Are you trying to maximize your NIL? Are you trying to win a championship? Are you trying to – because if you look at Cam Spencer last year, he entered the portal because he knew he could make a lot of money, but he ultimately didn't choose the biggest bag. He chose a situation where he could win a title, and that ended up working out for him. But there's plenty of guys who purely go for the money, and typically they don't – they're not the happiest after they make that decision.
That's true, too.
So it's all about what are these guys looking for? Because in my opinion, enjoying your last year of college while also making some money is probably the best cross-section. And some guys, they view it purely as business decision. I'm sorry. Mm-hmm. So there's not really a wrong way to approach it, but there's probably a better way from a happiness standpoint to approach it.
So supposedly he's visiting Oklahoma this weekend, and Butler had a Zoom call with him this weekend as well.
So, interesting.
No Butler visit yet, but keep an eye on.
Interesting. So we've been kind of scouring our sources for updates on where the big man hunt is going, or the big man search is going for Rutgers. You might have snagged a lead, a strong lead last night about one of the guys Rutgers is targeting. And I say all this with a grain of salt that it sounds like Rutgers is not in the pole position here. I just want to preface everything we say right now saying that Rutgers is not in the lead, but Rutgers is pushing for this guy. This is Felix Okpara. This was the former Ohio State big man. He entered the portal after Ohio State landed Aaron Bradshaw in the portal. It was kind of like a, okay, I guess I'm not going to be the starting center. Like a lot of these teams are trying to do this like twin tower approach to the, you know, getting big men. You know, you saw what, you saw the success UConn had it with 2 years ago, you know,
this year.
Now every team's trying to do it. That's true. They had that this year as well. But Felix Okpara, he was, if you look at his stats, they don't like jump out at you. I think he averaged like 6.6 points per game this past year, like 6.7 rebounds a game. He had 2.4 blocks a game. He's an elite rim protector. He's also a young guy. He's got 2 years of eligibility left. He's originally from Nigeria, so Rutgers may have some kind of connection there if they're able to get him on campus between, you know, Cliff's still working out at the APC, from what I hear. Obviously, Emmanuel Ogbol is from Nigeria originally, but this is a guy who played his high school ball in Chattanooga, and then he spent his last year at Link Academy in Missouri. What is the connection between Rutgers and Okpara here, though?
So, like you just said, he played his high school ball in Chattanooga, Tennessee. Natives Jamichael Davis and Ace Bailey, both from there, played at McEachern, a little different, but his family, Okpara's family, is close with Ace Bailey's guardian. Ace Bailey's guardian currently coaches his younger brother, Kennedy Okpara, a 2025 kid. So from what I know, from the people I was talking to, Rutgers is pushing him. And it's not just Rutgers pushing him. It's Bailey's guardians kind of pushing him a little bit too. Now, he's not going to tell him straight up, go to Rutgers. Like, obviously, he's going to do this the right way because they are close with the family. But they're definitely going to throw Rutgers in his ear a little bit more as much as they can until he decides. So maybe you get Okpara on campus before he makes a decision. There's nothing set in stone that he's making a decision like ASAP, but Tennessee is the leader here because his family or his guardians, I'm not sure what the whole relationship is because he's a Nigerian native. It could be like a Cliff type situation where he's living or living with a guardian in the States. But they are close to Tennessee. And I think if you say correctly, or someone said Tennessee alumni, someone said it.
Yeah. So his guardians are Tennessee alums. Obviously he spent a lot of time in Tennessee. It sounds like Tennessee is in the lead here. But I mean, we've seen plenty of situations with portal guys that as they enter, they have a favorite and they don't end up at the favorite.
Cliff.
Cliff is a great one to point out, you know, all the Rutgers guys last year. Here's why I am high on this. I've referenced Evan Maya a bunch on here, and Evan Maya, for those who don't know, is basically the closest equivalent to like a PFF for hoops. Basically, they take all of these advanced analytics and they kind of give people like a rating based on those analytics, and then they project how those players will play next year as well. So obviously, Okpara, his stats don't wow you. But if you look a little deeper, as the season went on, he really started to come into his own. So in terms of just the rankings Evan Maya has up right now, so they have currently 1,711 guys in the transfer portal, according to them. And this includes guys who have committed already. So these are guys who just have entered the portal. According to their rankings, out of 1,711, Okpara is the 28th ranked player. Now, here's who he's ahead of, some notable players. He's ahead of DJ Wagner, who's 29th. He's ahead of Andrew Carr, another Rutgers target, who's 30th. He's ahead of Cliff Omori, who's 35th. He's ahead of Aaron Bradshaw, who's 42nd. He's ahead of Ruben Chinyelu, who's 63rd. He's ahead of Terrace Reed, who just committed to UConn, who's 97th. He's ahead of Danny Wolf, who just committed to Michigan, who's 102nd. So this is a guy who's who's very highly regarded in terms of the advanced analytics. If you look at how he did after Chris Holtman got fired, his numbers really started to bloom. So in that stretch where Ohio State kind of finished the season red hot, in those final nine games where Ohio State was 7-2, including a loss in the NIT, he averaged 25 minutes a game. He started all nine games, shot over 60% from the field. He's not a great free throw shooter, so I'm just going to put that out there. But he averaged 6.9 rebounds a game, 2.4 blocks a game. He only had 2.7 fouls a game, 8.6 points per game. He had multiple blocks in eight of his last nine games. He had double digits in five of his last nine, including a career high in the NIT versus Cornell, where he scored 16. He had double digits in every game in the NIT. If you look at just kind of his, like, you know, what is he, a better defender, better offensive player? He's a better defender by far. Obviously, referencing the 2.4 blocks a game is pretty awesome. But offensively, he's shown he's pretty advanced as well. In terms of his offensive rating, so 100 is average, and every 10 points you go up is one standard deviation. As a freshman, he had a 119 offensive rating. This past year, he had a 114. If you just compare that to Cliff the last 2 years, Cliff had a 103 or a 104 rating both years. The numbers around, you know, the shooting charts are very similar to Cliff, though. So Okpara was 88% on dunks this year, where Cliff was 82%. At the rim, he shot the majority of his shots. So Okpara was 81 for 116 around the rim, so that's a 69.8%. Cliff was 102 of 155, which was 65.8%. From the mid-range, Okpara was not great. He was 18 for 47, so 38%. And Cliff was 27 for 94, which was 28%. And he was 0 of 6 for 3. So he doesn't take a ton of threes, whereas Cliff is 1 of 5 from 3. Very similar numbers, but a little bit better offensively than Cliff. He's a little bit worse defensively. So this is the kind of guy who he also has 2 years of eligibility remaining. So if That's you can huge. Land him, he could potentially anchor your defense for two more years. All that to say, it sounds like Rutgers is not even in a distant second. It seems like everybody is behind Tennessee right now. So mm-hmm. we'll have to see how things go on the Tennessee front. But this is a guy that Rutgers is showing interest in and would be a fantastic pickup. We'll see if it happens. But that's kind of the rundown I have on Okpara.
Yeah, no, that's all. I like him. I think if you can get him, great. But end of the day, it's going to be a tough one. We'll wait and see what happens. Maybe they the Guardian can convince him kind of and be like, hey, just take a visit. Just check it out. That's all you need to do. I'm not saying you have to commit. I'm not saying you have to do anything. Just see what you can do. Take a visit. Go from there. That's pretty much it.
Yeah, we will have more for you on that situation, and we'll try and get an update on Andrew Carr this week as well. I know that he was discussed as favoring Villanova. The longer that doesn't happen, the better in terms of it ending up there. So we'll see how things go. The last thing I have on the docket is tomorrow night we will be recording a live show with John Newman, the president of Knights of the Raritan. Basically, you could sign up now and, you know, be in the wait list to join. Anybody can join. It's going to be a YouTube stream. Mm-hmm. But the idea is you ask whatever questions you want. Regarding the Scarlet Ticket, regarding NIL. I think he just wants to have the opportunity to kind of answer any questions, clear up any misconceptions, really just give you guys any answers you might have regarding anything related to NIL or the Scarlet Ticket. That'll be at 8 p.m. tomorrow night for a live show. We'll have the recording as a podcast as well following it. So mm-hmm. if you can't make it live, you can listen to it Wednesday morning in your podcast feed. So definitely want as many people into that as possible. We really appreciate John for offering to do that as well. What else do you have on the docket here before we head out?
I have a couple things. So going in regards to that, we have a message board forum. If you want to submit questions early, I will put the link down below in the YouTube description. We'll probably put it in the Spotify, Apple, whatever description too. Number two, Rutgers canceled their series with Kansas State in a couple years. That was this past week. That was interesting. Yeah, whatever. I mean, I think that was actually scheduled like before Greg returned, I think. I think that was right. So intrigued to see kind of how they replace that. I know these things are kind of boring because they're 2031. So like who cares? Yes, it was October 2016 when it was announced. In the midst of Chris Ash's first season. Whatever. I think you do need to find some kind of upgrade, though. I mean, they have Boston College coming up, UMass, Ohio, Akron this year, and Akron in the future. But I know people don't want to schedule other Power Fives, but or Power Fours. I want to see another Power Four. Everyone wants to see another Power Four. It just draws ratings, whether it be a local guy or not. I don't care. But you have Boston College on the schedule. It's not going to be Syracuse because it's Fran Brown, so I highly doubt that happens. Yeah, yep. And too many recruiting battles there. But go get Delaware. I mean, it's not Power Five, but go get that as like that borderline one. Go get a Power Five.
They're also going to be moving FBS up now. Shortly. Yeah.
So I would go get them on a future schedule, maybe even next year because you have two openings next year. I don't know. I don't know who else you can get, really. Pittsburgh, but you kind of compete against them recruiting-wise, too, so maybe not. I don't know. It's going to be intriguing to see where they kind of expand that schedule in the future. But Brandon Knight signed an extension. Pretty big news there. Kept him on board, although no buyout if he gets a D1 head coaching job. No buyout if he gets an NBA assistant job, which I thought was really intriguing because that wasn't in there before.
Interesting.
Last but not least, this article came out this morning, and Rutgers potentially could be looking for a new president again.
Really?
Jonathan Holloway is on the short list of people, and it's been a quote-unquote open secret for months now that he has a desire to leave Rutgers to become the new president of Yale.
Oh, boy.
Makes sense for the most part because he was a professor, I believe, at Yale, if I'm reading this correctly. He joined the university as a faculty member before becoming a full professor. Oh, yeah. Okay. He 4 years after receiving his grad degree in history from Yale in 1995, Holloway joined the university as a full-time professor in 2004, became the second black person to become head of Calhoun. I don't really know. Oh, head of Calhoun, now Grace Hopper College, and was chair of the African American Studies Department in 2014. He became the first black dean of Yale College in 2017. He stepped down to become the provost, if I got that right, at Northwestern before becoming the president of Rutgers in 2020. So Rutgers might be looking for a new president again. So I thought he kind of checked all the boxes: academics, athletics, loved athletics. Yep. Now you got to kind of go find someone else. It sounds like more than likely. We'll see if that happens, but apparently it's been a very open kept secret that no one's really talked about until now. Can't be an open secret if you didn't talk about it till the Yale president left.
Yeah.
That would be interesting to say the least.
Holloway has certainly been an advocate for athletics in his time as president. I mean, as a former student athlete, I think he was a football player at Stanford. It was nice to kind of have a person in the seat who understood the importance of athletics along with academics at a university in terms of the student experience. I hope that in the future, if you know the president's seat becomes available, that they take a similar approach in terms of candidates who think athletics have value in the institution where certain people who previously were the president of Rutgers maybe didn't believe that. Mm-hmm. Robert Barchi. So I just hope that if this does end up happening, that Rutgers has prerequisite for its next president, somebody who understands the value of Rutgers athletics and how important that is to not only the student experience but also in terms of recruiting for the school. You look at every big athletic season, you see a big bump afterwards in terms of applications. So not only are you have it's basically free marketing anytime you're on TV for Rutgers, but it's also a way to increase the quality of student across the board. So yeah, that's I didn't realize that article came out.
I just saw it a minute ago. That's why I figured we have to bring it up. Right. Potential names in the previous list were Christopher Malloy, the former chancellor who I think runs the pharmacy department now or pharmacy school, the chancellor of Rutgers Camden, chancellor of Rutgers Newark, University of Minnesota Provost, why don't you just keep stealing Minnesota's guys? It's been working out pretty well, right? Like, just keep doing it. Or yeah. In this case, girl, sorry. But she has a Harvard degree. Jonah Holloway was on that list, of course. I don't know. I don't really know where you go with this one. I do think I would like someone that has some kind of background in athletics, whether it be the college level, I would prefer. But I mean, it doesn't really matter to me. I don't think it really plays a major factor, but you need someone that understands athletics, understands New Jersey, in my opinion, too. We've seen what happens when you hire someone to run a program, maybe not a university, a legit different, but someone that runs a program in the state of New Jersey that doesn't know what the hell they're doing. And it's like, all hell breaks loose. And then your leading receiver's a tight end, and then you go for minus one in passing yards. But that's besides the point.
Richie's PTSD is showing now.
Sorry. It's just like, you ever see that meme? It's just like that meme with like war flashbacks. It's like, oh my God, again.
Yep.
Ugh,
I do.
I'm done.
All right. So thanks for listening, everybody. Just a reminder again, join us tomorrow night with John Newman for that live show. But we really do thank everybody for liking, subscribing, recommending us to a friend. We are this close to hitting 4,000 subscribers on YouTube. The sooner you do that, the sooner we can get that giveaway given out. So if you haven't already, subscribe to us on YouTube.
3.99.
So we are at the goal line here. It's first and goal from the half yard line to get us past 4,000. But thanks for listening once again. This has been another edition of the Nerd Report Podcast. So,
thank you for listening to Believe. You can show support to your host by subscribing to the show and giving us a 5-star rating on your preferred platform. Check us out at Believe.com and search for BLEAV on YouTube.
You know when you're listening to a true crime story that has an unbelievable plot twist that makes you stop in your tracks? That's what our podcast, People Are the Worst, brings you with each episode. I'm Rachel.
And I'm Rebecca. We're identical twins who love true crime cases that make you say, "Didn't see that coming," and we hate the people responsible for them. Listen to People Are the Worst now on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.